by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Our first clip here, we've had a hellacious week. We've had the problem with the U.S. Capitol, the overrun into the Capitol building on the 6th. And our first clip is going to describe that from someone that was on the ground, Michael Yon. He's a war correspondent with a wide experience background. And he describes personally his firsthand, witness here of what was going on and who was really behind this. So this is Michael Yon, Epoch Times, on one of their shows, their programs. This is about 8 minutes long.
On Wednesday, the big events happened at the Capitol building with Antifa leading the way and using agent provocateurs to basically guide Trump supporters into the Capitol building. Those are APs. Go over the wall. They had set up the bike rack barriers that they had taken down and used those for ladders, right? And so you had people, APs, helping people get over the wall, right? So I stopped, got video of their faces, photographed them, clear AP work. Come this way. Go up. Come on. There's still room. You can get in. Come on. You need to come up. This is your job. This is your chance. You know, stand up for your country. Waving huge Trump flags, got the rebel flags out there, you know, false flag. That's why they call it false flag. Meanwhile, you've got Trump supporters going, no, there's Antifa here. Antifa start attacking the police. They're like, that's not us. That's Antifa. You can see it on many videos.
At Epoch Times, we have many videos showing Trump supporters stopping actions like that, stopping destruction, and very clearly saying many, many times, we don't do that, don't break those things, so on.
Right. Yeah, the Trump supporters were trying to intervene. You can see when the initial attacks were going on, Trump supporters trying to pull them back. And then back from the front line on some of my other video, I haven't even looked at my own video yet, but people right in front of me talking, saying, I don't agree with this, this is wrong, we shouldn't be here. You know, there's Antifa all around us. You hear Trump supporters jumping up many times going, there's Antifa here. They're doing this. Antifa are making us look bad. Be careful. They're going to attack us. There's Antifa all over the place. They're dressed just like us. We don't know who they are. But on the tactical level out there in front of the Capitol, that was the tactical CNN, you might say, was Antifa that day. You know, leading them right into the action, breaking down doors. You can hear clearly Trump supporters saying, don't break anything, show respect. There must be thousands of videos, so I obviously can't go through them all. But you can clearly see many Trump supporters saying, don't break anything, don't steal anything, that sort of thing. And there you go. I did not go inside the building. I was outside the building watching the activities out there. You saw a lot of agent provocateur activity with Antifa using Hong Kong tactics, wearing the same sorts of masks that they wore in Hong Kong. As you know, I was in Hong Kong for approximately 7 months until they finally kicked me out. So I was in about 100 protests and 100 of the big protests and many of the small ones. So I'm very familiar with their tactics, very familiar with their procedures and how they operate. And we know that Antifa was actually in Hong Kong learning their tactics, and the goggles and the same sorts of 3M masks and that sort of thing. Because this requires the kind of analysis that only Epoch is doing at this time, you know, you in particular, because there's probably thousands of videos to digest. But what we've seen so far, and being physically present, Antifa clearly led the attack. That was utterly obvious. For instance, outside during a part of the attack, when there was much gas fired and I believe rubber bullets, I'm not sure about that. They were throwing flashbangs. That's clear. We were right there. There was a lady on a megaphone saying, "Send up the mask, send up the mask." She said it over and over. It's on our video and others. That's a clear Hong Kong tactic that I've never seen in any other war and conflict, which is Hong Kongers would constantly say, "Send up water, send up masks, send up shields." We saw shields. That's what they used in Hong Kong. That's what Antifa is constantly using. You see, they show up with their homemade shields often, or shields that they've stolen. And so, yeah, there was Antifa written all over this. What we saw there at the Capitol was right out of the handbook. It was the playbook. And in other words, show up wearing your enemy's clothing, waving their flags, and do things while, you know, basically false flags. That's why they call them false flags. They're bringing and waving the enemy flag, which is Trump supporters' flag. They're waving Trump flags and doing violence. Now, keep in mind, there's different elements of Antifa. There's that element that would occupy the Red House. That's not your A-team. What we saw in the Capitol building is your A-team. That's like your special forces Antifa. Those are the guys that come out for special actions. So that's your 1% of Antifa. On the pie chart that I've shown you before, that I've drew out for you on paper, that's your tiny sliver. That's your special forces of Antifa. That's what we saw in the Capitol building. They know exactly what they're doing. They're well trained. They're well organized. They show up with the gear that they need. They've got the statements ready to say, you know, "She's dead," that sort of thing. They come out. They make great statements for the camera, sound bites. These guys are professionals. They come in and they harness the energy of a pre-existing movement or protest. So what, in this case, let's say Trump supporters. I believe actual Trump supporters had a real rally. Trump called it himself. So he gave the speech at the Ellipse in the morning. So they basically hijack your horse, right? So they come in in this case, after the speech at the Ellipse, you had to walk, you know, pretty far over to the Capitol. So people were left the Ellipse to go to the next rally went to the Ellipse to hear President Trump speak, right? The next rally was at the Capitol building. So as Trump supporters started to go to the Capitol building where we went next, that's when I started seeing APs that were like, this way, keep coming forward. ACAB is all cops are bastards. So when you see ACAB, ACAB, written, usually it's magic marker or painted, that's a clear Antifa sign. It couldn't be any clearer. Trump supporters never come up with ACAB. For instance, you never see Trump supporters with shields. And Antifa constantly uses shields. Hong Kongers, of course, use a lot of shields because they were getting hit with rubber bullets.
Now, another thing we saw is individuals changing their clothes on the scene. I understand this is also something, it's very odd behavior. It's something also we've seen with some Antifa members. If you can tell us why they do that and some of the incidents we saw during the protests on January 6th where people were doing this as well.
Right. They're just harder to track when they change clothes, right? They can egress and ingress as well. They can go to the action in one set of clothes, change, do their Superman change, and then egress after they change clothes. I didn't go inside the Capitol building. I saw it on other people's video, right? So that's a common Hong Kong tactic, to bring change of clothes in your backpack or to wear two clothes to begin with and just take one off, right? Now, one thing to always watch for with change of clothes, this is basic spy craft 101, is they rarely change shoes, right? So the shoes will tend to be the same. You don't usually bring two pairs of shoes. You've got a group there. You can harness their energy and use it to your ends. Come this way, everybody, just wearing their, waving their flag. This is where it's at. Come over here. You know, go to here. We're going into this door, right? It's too easy. And once people get riled up, they'll do it because we're humans and we will go with the herd and right through that door. I am the most experienced living American combat correspondent. I've been doing this for years in many countries. As you know, Hong Kong, that's where we first met. And so war is what I do, not elections, right? And I know what I'm doing when it comes to war. And I see the United States is now clearly going into civil war. It's unambiguous at this point. And so what we saw there, Antifa is helping to rile this up. CCP is neck deep in this. And so we are facing an information war. of unprecedented scope. I've written 3 books on it. Unfortunately, they're all in Japanese because I've been working to try to wake the Japanese up to this. They're also a target. The Japanese are facing the same information war, but in Japanese language, trying to rewrite textbooks for schools, taking hold of teacher unions. Every technique and tactic that you see being used here is being used in Japan, right? And it's being used to split Korea and Japan. It's being used in Korea as well. As you know, I've spent years in Asia rolling around studying this thing. So it's coming for us now. We have to make a united face to face the enemy. The enemy is CCP and some others who are organic to the United States.
There you go with Michael Yon. Coming up is a report from a Utah Fox network about John Sullivan, who was arrested and released. But he was a big part of the intrusion into the U.S. Capitol. Here we go about that report, who he is.
Aaron Cox was the first to speak with the family of a Utah man arrested for his involvement in riots at the nation's capital. And tonight we are learning a lot more about his past. Aaron.
The 27-year-old has spent the last 6 months working at his own company, Insurgents USA. But before his life as an activist, John Sullivan was an athlete. The intense video of the U.S. Capitol riot filmed by John Sullivan is not the only video posted to his company's YouTube page.
Ready.
The speed skater on the left is the young activist. Sullivan was working towards the Olympics. The athlete had raised nearly $3,000 for Pyeongchang. In 2016, Sullivan's Twitter post showed an athlete running or biking. Sullivan was sponsored by a company called Hue for Every Man. And was featured in an Uber commercial. Then Sullivan's last post on Twitter for 2019, "Nobody likes to write about how they failed," he wrote. The blog post he linked to is now deleted. Then the athlete became an activist.
I believe the Black Lives Matter. I mean, I'm not here to assert myself and my beliefs on other people. I just want to give people the footage, the video.
He has culturally misappropriated this movement to benefit him financially.
Taisi Bellamy with Black Lives Matter for Humanity in Utah says though Sullivan says he is for Black Lives, he's not part of their organization.
And I have had very serious conversations with John. One of the conversations even brought me to tears on the phone with John when I realized just how lost he really is. He really has a goal to end up getting killed by these militia groups so that he can be a martyr.
Arrested after organizing the Provo protest in July of 2020, Sullivan continued posting about organized protests on the Instagram page for his company, Insurgents, a company Sullivan dedicated to ending police brutality and unifying the nation. Sullivan will be tried in Washington, D.C., and his next virtual appearance is January 22nd. Until then, he is essentially on house arrest. In Salt Lake City, Aaron Cox, Fox 13 News, Utah.
There's evidence from a lot of sources that he was involved in it in a material way. But anyway, it waits to be seen. All that evidence will have to come into the courtroom, and all this will have to be proven. But next coming up is an interview that Lou Dobbs had with John Sullivan, just news, okay? And he lays out some problems. They just had some of these different documents just released. I think Lindsey Graham affected some of the release. But it even makes it worse about the FISA and all that other stuff, and the Woods file that had to do with the FISA and all the evidence. That Woods file, they call it the Woods file, totally disappeared now. But anyway, here's Lou Dobbs with John Sullivan. Just the news. He's a fine person, Sullivan is, and Lou Dobbs is too. Here we go now with that interview.
Good evening, everybody. We may soon have new and explosive insight into what is the greatest political scandal in American history. The radical Dems and the deep state's efforts to overthrow President Trump. Hundreds of pages of depositions, transcripts, and FBI evaluations expected to soon be released to the public on Obamagate. The White House document release will follow on the reporting of Just the News editor-in-chief John Solomon, who here last night reported on the upcoming release. We'll be talking with John Solomon about what we can expect and what he knows here next. The documents to be released, declassified by President Trump. And among the bombshell revelations, an admission by former MI6 agent Christopher Steele, the author of the fraudulent Trump dossier, that he leaked information to the U.S. media from his dirty Trump dossier in an effort to distract from Hillary Clinton's ongoing email scandal and the reopening of the FBI investigation into that scandal. That admission, made in the fall of 2017, the documents promised to further expose the radical left and the deep state's plot, hatched by none other than Hillary Clinton, then candidate Donald Trump's opponent, to overthrow the Trump presidency later on. A plot that has been underway since the summer of 2016. In fact, on June 13, 2016, President Obama's former campaign manager laid it all out for everyone to see. David Plouffe tweeted this, quote, "It is not enough to simply beat Trump. He must be destroyed thoroughly. His kind must not rise again." That tweet, coming just weeks before James Comey initially closed the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton's email server scandal. Just before. And it was that same summer in which the Clinton campaign constructed the plot to distract from her scandal by ginning up the false Russia collusion fraud against then-candidate Trump. And Plouffe's tweet also, curiously preceded by only a month and a half, the FBI's first effort to frame General Michael Flynn. President Trump's declassification order threatens to expose any and all members of the deep state swamp, the radical Dems who have feverishly worked to undermine, to overthrow his presidency, and to block his agenda. Today, one of the gatekeepers of the swamp, none other than Senator Lindsey Graham, undercut the president once again. Graham's Senate Judiciary Committee released the transcripts of 11 interviews that Graham had kept hidden and unavailable from officials involved in investigating the origins of Obamagate. They include interviews from the likes of former DOJ officials Bruce Orr, Dana Bowente. All of the interviews released were conducted before the November 3rd election, and Senator Graham sat on every single one of them. Senator Graham also continues, well, to disappoint the American people, to say the least, to deny their right to know. And he had this brazen remark about his document dump today. "We have released as much material as possible, but some classified material has still been withheld. This, ladies and gentlemen, is one sorry excuse for a senator." Joining us tonight is John Solomon, editor-in-chief of Just the News, best-selling author, great American. And, John, let's start with this document dump from Senator Graham, since it is the most immediate development. Yeah, 11 interviews that he sat on. This man is contemptible.
Back to March of last year?
And
appalling. March of last year. Yeah, it's remarkable. I think Senator Graham was just simply trying to crash President Trump's last declassification party. You know, there's some interesting stuff in there, things that would have been nice to know before the election. I'll give you a good example. Steve Laycock, the executive assistant director of the FBI, says that everybody knew inside the FBI and the State Department that Christopher Steele was so bad that he actually thought the U.S. government had a consulate in Miami when none was existent. This is a guy we're trusting to give us intelligence, and he doesn't even know the Russians can't be doing what he claims because there is no consulate in Miami. Laycock testifies to the committee. Everybody was talking about it. We knew about that. And yet, while they knew he was that bad off, that Christopher Steele was that bad off, they were representing to the FISA court that he was a solid guy, no derogatory information. Those sort of revelations would have been nice last summer, last fall, not 4 days or 5 days mm-hmm. before Joe Biden takes office.
There are so many revelations that we have received, including the fact that Hillary Clinton authored the plot to distract from her own scandal, the email scandal, to have official Washington, our government, participate in a plot to block the candidacy of Donald Trump and to overthrow his presidency. What is stunning to me, John, is with that knowledge, and it's separate from this, in part it's separate from this release of documents we're expecting from the White House. We know this. And the radical Dems, Nancy Pelosi, proceed with this impeachment fraud once again against the president. The national left-wing media is so intertwined, so complicit with the Democratic Party and the deep state that they're not even acknowledging. The American people, many of the, if not most Americans, don't realize the hoax that's been perpetrated on them. And that is this plot hatched by Hillary Clinton and the Dems to destroy Donald Trump. David Plouffe wasn't kidding when he said what he did.
No, he wasn't kidding. You know, the great thing about David Plouffe, he tells you exactly what he's going to do. And the Republicans have been asleep at the switch for 4 years as he's told the American public what he planned to do. The reason why the media, the mainstream media, is silent is that they were primary co-conspirators in the creation, dissemination, yeah. dissemination, and sustaining of a false narrative for 2 and 3 years. And to this day, by not acknowledging their failures, by not covering the reversal of the story with the same aggressiveness that they first put it on the front pages, they have deserved the American public. And that's why in the Gallup poll that came out right after Christmas, American news media are held at the lowest esteem in American history. And 30% of Americans, a third of America, don't believe a single word that comes from the news media. They have made their own bed, just like Twitter and Facebook, who've lost $50 billion of video value in the last week. The American market, people are beginning to revolt against these institutions.
Well, they had better, because this government is as corrupt as I could possibly have ever imagined. Could you, in all seriousness, could you have ever possibly imagined that one political party, the Democrats, would be this corrupt, would seize control of a government as they attempt to overthrow a president with members of the deep state, as they have been doing since 2016?
If I was looking for a good movie, I'd hope that'd be the plot line. It'd be really interesting. The sad part is this is actually historically unfolded before our eyes. You have the alignment of news media bureaucrats in the Democratic Party carrying out a 4-year political dirty trick that whose origins or the origins of which began with the desire to keep Hillary Clinton from having to answer to her email scandal. It is atrocious, and everybody knew it. President Obama knew it in July of 2016. The FBI knew about it in October of 16. And yet for 3 and 4 years, false stories from Adam Schiff down to the front page of the New York Times were force-fed to the American people. All of those institutions that have let us down deserve accountability, and Americans have that ability. They vote with their checkbook. They vote with their ballots. They have to take stake of what we're about to learn in the next 3 days. It's going to be an ugly story that we're going to be told.
And contemporaneously, corporate America is refusing to now donate money to the Republican Party because of the fiction ginned up by Pelosi and Schumer, and to a degree, the president-elect, that the president incited a mob and was responsible for the violence. Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the Republicans in the House, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, participating in this outrage against the President of the United States, while every one of these plots, every one of these malign actors over the course of 4 years is escaping media attention and consequence either at the polls because no one, not enough people even know what they've done, or because they are being blocked by big tech, social media, It's an outrage and a dark, dark day in American history.
Yeah, millions of people share your sentiments, Lou, and it's because it's based in fact. These things have happened, and there needs to be accountability. But I also think that, you know, one of the things about the Capitol riot, as tragic as it is, as awful as it is that the story is going to evolve. And I suspect it's going to evolve like the Russia collusion story. Hopefully it won't take us 4 years, but we're seeing the changes in the narrative already. We now have a liberal activist who's been charged with participating. We now know there was plotting. We now know there was warnings. The big questions for me are, what did Nancy Pelosi know? When
he
did
was
she know?
Actually,
yeah.
No, I think you're
and
right.
Mitch McConnell,
and,
what did he know?
You're, absolutely. What did they all know? Because the RINOs and the leaders of the Republican Party are just as guilty as hell of working against this president and against the will of the American people. John, one quick question. Fiona Hill.
Sure.
Talk about very
yes.
quickly, because we're using up a lot of time here, but she made a reference to you regarding the Russian collusion narrative in those so-called impeachment inquiry hearings. Your thoughts?
Listen, I don't hold it. She has a right to her own opinion about my reporting. I think my reporting has stood the test of time. Listen, she's the person. We're going to find this out tomorrow or over the weekend. She's the person who introduces Christopher Steele to Subsource One. Who is Subsource One? The person that gave him all the bad Russian disinformation and who the FBI had under investigation since 2009. So Fiona Hill was hanging out with somebody the FBI thought was a Russian disinformation artist, and it would have been nice to have known that so she could be cross-examined when she was an impeachment witness. But once again, we're finding out far too late.
In other words, it's straightforwardly the testimony that we heard, not only from her, but many, if not most, of the other witnesses were outright lies and designed as disinformation against the American
certainly
people.
Certainly omissions. There are a lot of omissions. I'm not sure I'd say lies, but I would say omissions for sure.
I'll say lies and omissions. John Solomon, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
The lies have been very great, and they're just they all came together to get rid of Trump because he disrupted their money schemes. And they're plundering of the U.S. Treasury on a lot of levels in a lot of different ways. Now, I'm going to play a short clip. There was the head of Twitter was eavesdropped on and recorded about him closing down President Trump's Twitter. But he said that's just not the one thing that they're worried about. Now they're going to look into the future on other accounts and into the future. And this is very, very disturbing. So here we go with that short clip.
You should always feel free to express yourself in whatever format manifestation feels right. We do intend to do a full retro, as I said in my note. It is going to take some time. And then the other thing, just to close out a little bit, we are focused on one account right now, but this is going to be much bigger than just one account, and it's going to go on for much longer than just this day, this week, the next few weeks. It's going to go on beyond the inauguration. We have to expect that. We have to be ready for that. So the focus is certainly on this account and how it ties to real world violence, but also we need to think much longer term around how these dynamics play out over time. I don't believe this is going away anytime soon, and the moves that we're making today around QAnon, for instance, is one such example of a much broader approach that we should be looking at and going deeper on. So the team has a lot of work and a lot of focus on this particular issue. We also need to give them the space and the support to focus on the much bigger picture, because it is not going away. The U.S. is extremely divided. Our platform is showing that every single day, and our role is to protect the integrity of that conversation and do what we can to make sure that no one is being harmed based off that. And that is the focus, and that is the color.
There you have it. Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, recorded by one of his own employees, an insider whistleblower at Twitter, recorded saying this is going to be much bigger than just one account, revealing some censorship. You could see our motto at Veritas, our organization is protected by an army of citizen patriots. We've had over a dozen people reach out to us this week with video, evidence inside Twitter. Stay tuned. They may be private companies, but they have more power than all three branches of government. VeritasTips@ProtonMail.com.
That was James O'Keefe with Project Veritas, founder of Project Veritas, that ended up after that insider, you know, say eavesdropping, recording. Some kind of insider there with Twitter recorded that and then added it to Project Veritas, is my understanding. So anyways, we've got just a lot of going ons there in this country, and I'm very, very worried. Our next clip is Martha McCallum interviewed David Victor Hansen and Charlie Kirk, and so that gives some of their opinions about this these release of these documents and just some overall very insightful views. So here we go with that.
Line that can be drawn from this Russia collusion debacle, which turned out to have no evidence pointing to any direct ties to the Trump campaign, to where we are today, the distrust that it sowed, the resistance that it built against the president that was really relentless from day one and continues today.
Absolutely. We were told that a minor lawyer in the FBI, Kevin Kleinsmith, just sort of misused an email and doctored, and that was it. Now we learn that the entire Woods file, all the bases for surveilling American citizen Carter Page, was gone. It was erased, disappeared. And this wasn't idiosyncratic, Martha, because remember the Page struck textual, part of that disappeared. And then the phone records of FBI agents that were involved disappeared. And basically, if to understand this, Hillary Clinton, through three firewalls, the DNC, Perkins Coie, and Fusion GPS, hired a foreign national, which is against the law, to participate in a campaign, paid him money, he concocted a false dossier, and then with contacts that he had in both the FBI and the DOJ, especially Bruce Orr, he spread this lies to destroy an opposition candidate, and when that wasn't enough, then it was to destroy a presidential transition, and then it was to destroy a president. And a lot of that material poisoned the entire 4 years of the Trump administration, and now we're in this Orwellian situation where a president whose entire tenure was there was an attempt to destroy it and say that the election, as you pointed out, was fraudulent. Now he is tarred because he questioned an election. And so there is no accountability. FBI, we just learned, on more power to them. We all hope they find 200 people that may be suspected of foul play or assault or worse and vandalizing the Capitol. But they've had 4 years, and we can't find anybody who tried to overturn a U.S. election and use a foreign national to concoct a completely false dossier and ruin somebody's candidacy and people around him. So. There is no justice.
You pointed out one of the facts. There's a lot to dig into in these new releases today. But as Victor rightly points out, the Woods file, which is the entire file on the FISA request, it's missing. They couldn't find it. Don't know where it is. We've seen this happen, over the course of, I remember during the Clinton presidency, enormous files were missing and then they showed up again. This doesn't happen to normal people, Charlie. The things that we worked on or have in our, they don't just disappear in enormous chunks conveniently when they're the subject of investigation.
And I think KT brought up a great point that this really charted a different direction for the Trump presidency from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine where the country would be if all of a sudden you had that 100-day period just to kind of get your administration set and plot out your main objectives. I mean, from day 8 to day 15 to day 20 of the Trump administration, it was mired with rumors and leaks and resignations, all stemming from this very investigation. We still don't have full transparency from it. And Victor brings up a phenomenal point, which is, why is it just to date there's a singular indictment with Kevin Kleinsmith with all of that has happened here? Mm-hmm. It ruined people's lives. And if Carter Page and KT McFarland are able to make the case, I hope that they're able to bring that to court because it ruined them financially and otherwise. And it's sad to say that this happened in the United States of America, and it had more damage than even to President Trump, even more than his administration. It divided the country because still to this day, half the country believes the narrative that President Trump was compromised by Russia, something that has been proven not to be true. And I hope that this declassification can at least help bring some justice out of the situation.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I want to get your quick thought on this other topic, but it's all kind of related in a way, Victor. This was in the Wall Street Journal today, talking about Jack Dorsey's remorse, if you can call it that, his you know, sort of second look at the decision to ban the president from Twitter. And it says the CEO maintained that his ban on Mr. Trump was necessary, but expressed unease about, quote, the power an individual or corporation has over a part of the global public conversation. Quick thought on that before I let you go, Victor.
Very quickly, you can't have three companies all coincidentally go after Parler and then try to deplatform and cancel Donald Trump. And it's part of a Jesse Smollettization or Covington kids change of heart in this hysteria. And I think Donald Trump, you know, he's been impeached and now we're going to break the Constitution, violate it, and try to convict him as a private citizen. We're going to destroy his companies. We're going to not let him, his companies have loans. We're going to blacklist him from Twitter. We're going to destroy Parler. At some point, people are going to say, you know, what do you want to do? Mutilate the political corpse of Donald Trump? And we're going to have a very radical agenda from Joe Biden. I think people are going, there's going to be a backlash at all this. This isn't the American way at all.
All right. We will see and we will cover it closely. Victor Davis Hanson, Charlie Kirk, great to have you both here tonight. Thank you, gentlemen.
This next clip is an interview that Alex Jones had with Steve Pachinik. And it's very, very insightful, but very controversial. But, you know, it sounds like a Tom Clancy ending is what he's describing. But here we go now with that.
You know, I hope Dr. Steve Pachinik's right that we had a military coup, but that the Chi-Com agent Joe Biden gets exposed. But I thought, you know, let's get him on now 7 days until whatever's going to happen. The country is under martial law. Total insanity is unfolding. So, Doc, finishing up, other points you'd like to make or relay to the viewers and listeners out there?
Here's the very simple point I'm going to make. Here's the bet we're going to have, Alex, once and for all. If I'm wrong, I will never appear on your show again. But if I'm right, I become one of your official paid commentators. You want that
if
bet?
If you're right, I'll hire you and pay you. You can be on the show every day.
That's correct. All right. So we have that bet, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm going to talk to you about the positive aspects of what's going on. It's called the Black Robe Regiment, and those are the American Christians who have understood that by praying with Jesus, we can in effect implement the necessary constitutional rights that we had. Now, why do I say that? Number one, the Black Robe Regiment was really founded in the Revolutionary War. And I have to remind you in America that we did not come out of peace. It was called a revolution. That means initially we were terrorists against the British. In that process, the Black Robe Regiment were incredible Christian pastors who supported their churches with the notion that you had to fight for liberty, justice, and Jesus. That's exactly what's happening now. And there are those loyal American Christians who belong to this Black Robe Regiment. And I appreciate what they do. I appreciate what you did, Alex. But for the first time, you're beginning to understand you were the vehicle through which I could implement or the system could implement what they needed to do. It was not through YouTube. It was not through email. You were being used for 20 years as the major way of communicating to the military and the intelligence. What you forgot, Alex, was the first time I ever came on. You said there were thousands and thousands of operatives listening to us on 9/11. And when we came on 9/11, less than two people in this whole world believed that this was I was correct about 9/11. 5 years later, thanks to your show and our ability to discuss and have our differences, 70% of America understood that Bush Jr., Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, all cowards, all corrupt.
Well, that's why, you have the courage to expose 9/11 as an inside job and give out key intel and leave the Council on Foreign Relations. So I know that was a bold thing you did.
Yeah, but that's not about me. I'm talking about you, Alex. You were the vehicle that was initially anointed, say, by me, all right? But you were anointed because I took that risk to say this is going to be the major vehicle for where we're going to go in the next 20 or 30 years. So in this process, you have to remember, what is this coup about? This is a coup to pay back the Cheneys for the corruption and cowardice, for the wars that they sent us in Iraq and Afghanistan, to Obama, who sent up the war, including Biden, who specifically sent soldiers there, and we lost 5,000 people there, to Obama again, who sent us into war into Afghanistan, to Bush Sr., to Colin Powell, who lied continuously, pathological liar, who was a coward in Vietnam and said we didn't have any lie. Then he lied when he said we had anthrax.
No, I understand you're exposing their backgrounds. We have Ken Paxton, speaking of arrested that lady in the Veritas video buying votes. We've got all this stuff coming up, but this is crazy. Trump is cut off. Trump is off YouTube. They're not letting the president speak. He should use the EAS alert system. Let's do a few more minutes with Dr. Steve Pachinik back in 60 seconds. All right, Pompeo just announced that he'll be resigning the day of the inauguration of Lord Biden. So I guess Biden won't have the pleasure of getting rid of him. But Dr. Steve Pachinik has been more accurate than he's been wrong. I mean, I'd give him 95% accuracy rate. And he's doubling down. I'll give it to him. Some of this sounds Q-ish to me, but he's a real guy. He's a best-selling author. He's a psychiatrist. He did the Camp David Accords. He's been around forever. He did write Tom Clancy's books. He did make these big films. He did overthrow governments. I mean, he's been on the show before, and there's, like, federal investigations over it and articles in the London Guardian. Yeah, he's the one that tricked the communists to kill the Italian prime minister. And I mean, he's definitely done the stuff, okay? It's not a bunch of talk. And so he's sitting here saying all of this, and then I see the weird martial law and all this stuff. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I'm just a guy that researches politics here in Texas and loves freedom. But I know this. I don't see how the power structure puts a Joe Biden in control. I mean, the guy can hardly talk. The guy's a Chinese agent, totally penetrated, on record, under criminal investigation for it. And I just don't see where this goes, and Kamala Harris and all of this. So are you saying this is some larger, giant dialectic? Then tell me, how does it unfold the next 7 days that suddenly they're all arrested? And then what happens with Trump? I mean, what the hell, according to what you're saying, humor me, what's going to happen next?
Alex, I don't need to humor you. Basically, what I've said, you are funny in many cases. What is going to happen is Biden will be arrested. Pelosi was going to be arrested. Remember what I said about Pelosi. Her family was Alexandria out of Baltimore, Maryland. They were corrupt. She is corrupt. There's nothing here that's new. In other words, let's get to very simple psychology. This is repetition compulsion. In other words, if you're a crook and a coward, this will continue your whole life. That's Cheney. That's Pelosi. That's Biden. There's nothing new about Biden we didn't know. In effect, I think Biden understood his days were limited. He will be picked up. His son will be picked up. The man who will be the next president of the United States, I said it to you months ago, will be Trump.
So is that why Biden says things like, I'll feign an illness and go away?
This is exactly mirroring, you could say testimony, that came out of the Q files, you know, Shan 8, Channel 8, Channel 4. And I followed it early on, several years ago. And then they started piling up 10,000, 15, 20,000 civil indictments. I began to say, no, I don't, there's too many. But anyway, coming up next is is we're going to close out this, and I want to make some comments on it. Fiona Hill testified during the impeachment, first impeachment, you could say, hearings, you could say, against Trump. And now John Solomon is testifying on Lou Dobbs' program, and Lou Dobbs too. John Solomon is saying that some of her testimony was either omissions were left out, and then I think Lou Dobbs put in there, well, he sees omissions and maybe lying. So we're going to play her testimony, and this to show that these are sophisticated people. They look good on the surface, but they're all totally involved in this deep state. And they're not for this country. But anyway, this was her testimony during the impeachment trials right now.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Nunes and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify before you today. I have a short opening statement. I appreciate the importance of Congress's impeachment inquiry, and I'm appearing today as a fact witness, as I did during my deposition on October 14th. In order to answer your questions about what I saw, what I did, what I knew, and what I know with regard to the subjects of your inquiry. I believe that those who have information that the Congress deems relevant have a legal and a moral obligation to provide it. I take great pride in the fact that I'm a non-partisan foreign policy expert who has served under three Republican and Democratic presidents. I have no interest in advancing the outcome of your inquiry in any particular direction except toward the truth. I will not provide a long narrative statement because I believe that the interest of Congress and the American people is best served by allowing you to ask me your questions. And I'm happy to expand upon my October 14th deposition testimony in response to your questions today. But before I do so, I'd like to communicate two things. First, I'd like to share a little bit about who I am. I'm an American by choice, having become a citizen in 2002. I was born in the northeast of England, in the same region that George Washington's ancestors came from. Both my region and my family have deep ties to the United States. My paternal grandfather fought through World War I in the Royal Field Artillery, surviving being shot, shelled, and gassed before American troops intervened to end the war in 1918. During the Second World War, other members of my family fought to defend the free world from fascism alongside American soldiers, sailors, and airmen. The men in my father's family were coal miners, whose families always struggled with poverty. When my father, Alfred, was 14, he joined his father, brothers, brother, uncles, and cousins in the coal mines to help put food on the table. When the last of the local mines closed in the 1960s, my father wanted to emigrate to the United States to work in the coal mines in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. But his mother, my grandmother, had been crippled from hard labor, and my father couldn't leave. So he stayed in northern England until he died in 2012. My mother still lives in my hometown today. While his dream of emigrating to America was thwarted, my father loved America, its culture, its history, and its role as a beacon of hope for the world. He always wanted someone in the family to make it to the United States. I began my university studies in 1984, and I just learned that I went to the same university as my colleague here, Mr. Holmes, in St. Andrews in Scotland. I just thought I would add that. And in 1987, I won a place on an academic exchange to the Soviet Union. I was there for the signing of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces, or INF, treaty, and when President Ronald Reagan met Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in Moscow. This was a turning point for me. An American professor who I met there told me about graduate student scholarships to the United States. And the very next year, thanks to his advice, I arrived in America to start my advanced studies at Harvard. Years later, I can say with confidence that this country has offered me opportunities I never would have had in England. I grew up poor with a very distinctive working-class accent. In England, in the 1980s and 1990s, this would have impeded my professional advancement. This background has never set me back in America. For the best part of three decades, I've built a career as a non-partisan, non-political national security professional focusing on Europe and Eurasia, and especially the former Soviet Union. I've served our country under three presidents, in my most recent capacity under President Trump, as well as in my former position under my former position of National Intelligence Officer for Russia and Eurasia under Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama. In that role, I was the intelligence community's senior expert on Russia and the former Soviet republics, including Ukraine. It was because of my background and experience that I was asked to join the National Security Council in 2017. At the NSC, Russia was part of my portfolio, but I was also responsible for coordinating U.S. policy for all of Western Europe, all of Eastern Europe, including Ukraine and Turkey, along with NATO and the European Union. I was hired initially by General Michael Flynn, Katie McFarland, and General Keith Kellogg. But then I started work in April 2017 when General McMaster was the National Security Advisor. I, and they, thought that I could help them with President Trump's stated goal of improving relations with Russia while still implementing policies designed to deter Russian conduct that threatens the United States, including the unprecedented and successful Russian operation to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. This relates to the second thing I want to communicate. Based on questions and statements I have heard, some of you on this committee appear to believe that Russia and its security services did not conduct a campaign against our country, and that perhaps, somehow, for some reason, Ukraine did. This is a fictional narrative that has been perpetrated and propagated by the Russian security services themselves. The unfortunate truth is that Russia was the foreign power that systematically attacked our democratic institutions in 2016. This is the public conclusion of our intelligence agencies, confirmed in bipartisan congressional reports. It is beyond dispute, even if some of the underlying details must remain classified. The impact of the successful 2016 Russian campaign remains evident today. Our nation is being torn apart. Truth is questioned. Our highly professional and expert Korea Foreign Service is being undermined. U.S. support for Ukraine, which continues to face armed Russian aggression, has been politicized. The Russian government's goal is to weaken our country, to diminish America's global role, and to neutralize a perceived U.S. threat to Russian interests. President Putin and the Russian security services aim to counter U.S. foreign policy objectives in Europe, including in Ukraine, where Moscow wishes to reassert political and economic dominance. I say this not as an alarmist, but as a realist. I do not think long-term conflict with Russia is either desirable or inevitable. I continue to believe that we need to seek ways of stabilizing our relationship with Moscow, even as we counter their efforts to harm us. Right now, Russia's security services and their proxies have geared up to repeat their interference in the 2020 election. We are running out of time to stop them. In the course of this investigation, I would ask that you please not promote politically driven falsehoods that so clearly advance Russian interests. As Republicans and Democrats have agreed for decades, Ukraine is a valued partner of the United States, and it plays an important role in our national security. And as I told the committee last month, I refuse to be part of an effort to legitimize an alternate narrative that the Ukrainian government is a U.S. adversary and that Ukraine, not Russia, attacked us in 2016. These fictions are harmful even if they are deployed for purely domestic political purposes. President Putin and the Russian security services operate like a super PAC. They deploy millions of dollars to weaponize our own political opposition research and false narratives. When we are consumed by partisan rancor, we cannot combat these external forces as they seek to divide us against each other, degrade our institutions, and destroy the faith of the American people in our democracy. I respect the work that this Congress does in carrying out its constitutional responsibilities, including this inquiry, and I am here to help you to the best of my ability. If the President or anyone else impedes or subverts the national security of the United States in order to further domestic political or personal interests, that's more than worthy of your attention. But we must not let domestic politics stop us from defending ourselves against the foreign powers who truly wish us harm. I'm ready to answer your questions. Thank you.
They talk about all these high-minded, that was beyond a hill, about these high democracy and all that other stuff. And actually, they're part of a big machine, an international machine. And it might be something like Spectre. I think it resembles Spectre more than anything else. And in the Ukraine, in Maidan, in 2014, at Maidan Square there, there's evidence that has come out now that there were snipers up on the music observatory building and other places firing into the crowds, and they were firing both into the protesters and firing into the security forces trying to put down this big protest movement. So they were just creating an agent provocateuring a big, big blow up. And they did, and they got rid of the president. He was too close to Putin, too close to the Russians. And they put a, you know, just a, you know, caretaker in there that was under the control of the West. And so, these people, these, you know, State Department people and these foreign, you know, relations people talk really good. And I think that's one of the problems that Trump had, was these people are highly educated. They speak real well. They've got a lot of facts and figures at their, on their, you know, on their tip of their tongue, right at their fingertips, you know. And so they sound good and they look good, but the whole system is so corrupt now. That's what people don't see is that, the corruption is such a deep level here. The swamp. Let's just use that word, the swamp. Well, it was way deeper, I think, than President Trump could have ever imagined. And I don't like his ego and all these things, insults that he cast on people. I don't like that, these dispersions that he cast out. Because when he did that, these are the same people that organized together and are ushering him out the White House, see? So, but I still believe he cares about the country more than they do. And so we've just got to try to reorganize our government and our country and try to, you know, stay here and with our political view. It's being castigated and attacked more and more each and every day. I mean, there's been people now, some students want to take away, and these are just absurd, you know, statements, assertions. So they want to take away degrees from people that graduated from, you know, Harvard if they're on Trump's side. Or just because you were a Trump supporter, now you're a revolutionary. I mean, you know, you're part of the attack on the Capitol when you might not have even been there. But Michael Yon at the beginning of this hour spoke very, very insightfully. He had experience in Iraq. He was embedded. He has a background. He went into Hong Kong. And you can re-listen to that. His last experience has been in Hong Kong and seeing the agent provocateurs that the Chinese put together to break up the student demonstrations and protest movement there. That's what they had to do. In Tiananmen Square, the same thing was done later at the universities. And these Confucius groups that they established at these universities were just networks of spies and turning in students that were, say, against the government and so forth. So later on, they could be disciplined or you know, benefits and stuff like that taken away from them, socially controlled or, decapitalized or defunded, I should say, or whatever. So anyway, I want to thank each and every one out there listening to this. You got to look past these very sophisticated people, and they can testify like Fiona Hill's testimony. It sounded really good. But today, after these new releases of classified information that are coming out, it's showing that she and many others were possibly part of a total, you could say, conspiracy to get rid of Trump. And more and more evidence is pointing in that direction. So we just got to hang in there and keep broadcasting and putting out what we believe the truth to be and try to save this country. This country is in sad shape and is in a risky state of affairs, in danger. So this country is in very, very danger area. So we must stand tall and fight on our sacred ground. So thank you for listening and good night.